Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. National Parks, today on Advanced. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to another Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Simon, and you are joining me and my co-host, Linda C., in the studio today for the second part of our April Environment article, The Great Outdoors. Now, this is the second part of this article. So yesterday, Linda and I were talking about basically the way America's national parks have influenced the American identity, the way Americans think about themselves. And we talked a little bit about this idea that Americans tend to think of themselves as kind of outdoorsy people who enjoy rugged camping kind of experiences, things like that. Certainly millions of Americans go to national parks to camp and various other things, even if it's just hiking or day trip kind of stuff each year. It's obviously part of the identity. But we also talked a little bit about how things got that way. And we were basically introduced to two characters. Linda, do you remember who those two guys were?
Yes. We were introduced to Wallace Stegner, who was a noted writer. And we were also introduced to David Pennison. He was one of the people on the Outdoor Recreation Resources Review Commission to examine outdoor recreation, find out what people wanted from these public lands and the outdoors, and to research how that might change in the future.
As I understand it, the context behind that was that all of this interaction between these two characters was happening in the 1950s and 1960s. Mm-hmm. But long before that, America had established national parks, basically as there was sort of a realization that they had expanded all the way to the Pacific Ocean. So they were occupying and using all of the land. There was no more sort of new land to move into for that American state.
They reached the coast.
And, yeah. That was, and they wanted to make sure it wasn't all divided up into little, they wanted to save some of it. So they set away aside these parks. But the issue being that saving something and making it sort of a public space for use are different things. And so there seems to have been a growing awareness during this period, the 50s and 60s, that they needed to make use of parks in a way that really benefited the American people. So there was this commission, and our commissioner, I always want to call him person, but it's Pessinen, right? Pessinen?
Mm-hmm.
This Pessinen person, obviously an appointee to the commission who did not really have a clear idea of how wilderness was affecting identity, but had read a book that was written by the Stegner that had quite the title. It was called Beyond the 100th Meridian, John Wesley Powell and the Second Opening of the West. And so apparently this book was, I don't know, eloquent enough to have ignited a real interest in our commissioner, to the point that he basically wrote to the writer of the book, wrote a letter, you know, obviously, or contacted him and sought help in expressing this idea. Now, what was the idea they wanted to express?
They wanted to express what wilderness was and the importance of it.
They keep calling it wilderness idea or the wilderness, you know, values, I suppose you could say, the wilderness system. A little bit of linguistic difficulty here was that normally when we say wilderness, what we mean is just like areas that are untouched by people. Mm-hmm. But when they are using it here, they're talking much more about the way American people think of wilderness and how it affects them and their lives, right? So what they were really looking at is how to use these lands that had been sort of set aside for public use and public benefit, I guess would be the idea. Now, we learned at the end that basically the writer of the book, Stegner, had responded to the commissioner, Pessinen, with a letter that was written fairly quickly. I think they used the term off the cuff, which means without planning. Mm-hmm. You're just like kind of impromptu. And basically, it was this beautifully eloquent letter. And today, as we jump into our reading, we're going to explore that idea, the ideas that were put forward in this letter a little more, so we have a better understanding of that American sense of what wilderness is as it relates to being American. Oh, Linda, I'm exhausted. Do you have anything to add to that? Or was that a relatively, you know, acceptable summary of what we talked about?
Yes, I think we can hear the first reading.
Do you think we should ask Campbell to jump in now and do it? Yes. I want to say, Campbell, I didn't thank you a single time yesterday. I'm sorry about that. I do appreciate your reading and the work you put into preparing for it. So, Campbell, without further ado, take us away with the first reading.
A stirring appeal. In the letter, Stegner connected the idea of wilderness to a fundamental part of American identity. He called wilderness something that has helped form our character and that has certainly shaped our history as a people, the challenge against which our character as a people was formed, and the thing that has helped to make an American different from, and, until we forget in the roar of our industrial cities, more fortunate than other men. Without wild places, he argued, the U.S. would be just like every other over-industrialized place in the world. Stegner expressed little concern with how wilderness might support outdoor recreation on public lands. He didn't care whether wilderness areas had once featured roads, trails, homesteads, or even natural resource extraction. What he cared about was Americans' freedom to protect and enjoy these places. Stegner recognized that the freedom to protect, to restrain ourselves from consuming, was just as important as the freedom to consume.
Listeners, if you had your magazine, I hope you had it open so you could enjoy that with us. If you didn't have your magazine, I would encourage you to get one because it is the easiest way to help support Advanced Radio. Now, Linda, we've just had Campbell read this to us. This letter, it is an appeal. Now, what is an appeal in a letter?
When you appeal, like you make an appeal, you ask for something, or you're trying to garner support or contribution or something. So this is asking for something.
Okay.
And it was very stirring. It was very, like Esther said, it must have been a moving letter to, because it marked a turning point in American political and conservation history.
So stirring here means it caused people to have emotional feelings.
Right. It produced a lot of strong feelings in people.
When we're talking about emotion, sometimes we talk about stirring up, which means, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess the way you would think about this is if you are standing in a river or a lake that maybe has a muddy bottom, the river is, you know, the water's fairly clear, but if you put your foot in and start stirring it around, the mud will be lifted up from the bottom. And so in the same way, the idea is these are not new feelings. They're feelings people sort of have had within them, but you're saying something that makes those emotions kind of come out and, you know, causes a response. So the idea here is that Americans already had these feelings about wilderness, and Stegner was just kind of bringing them up, pointing them out, encouraging them to grow. So in the letter, Stegner connected the idea of wilderness to a fundamental part of American identity. So this is where we first see someone talking about the ideas we've been talking about over the last couple of days, how this idea of national parks and things like that, it's a very American thing to do. Mm-hmm. Go camping, go hiking, go fishing, go hunting. You can't do the fishing and the hunting in the national parks, but
right.
You can in the wilderness, right? So there you go.
So he called wilderness something that has helped form our character and that has certainly shaped our history as a people.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge against which our character as a people was formed.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. This last winter, I was in Canada over the Christmas season, and there were snowstorms going on. I mentioned yesterday that in Canada, a big part of the national identity comes from the idea of like winter in the north and snow and cold and things like that. And one of the things that happened during snowstorms was a bunch of people basically slid their cars off the road into the ditch at the side of the road. And it was remarkable to see other people just stopping to basically rescue strangers from this sort of situation. So there was very much this sense that as a people, the people who lived in Canada, we were one group that was all together basically battling to survive the snowstorm. Mm-hmm. And in the same way, that's kind of what we're having described here. The challenge, it says, against which our character, that's the character of Americans, not Linda and I, as a people was formed. And so the idea being that it was not an easy thing to open up the frontier and go through the Wild West and, you know, sort of form the country there. It was a real struggle, not just a struggle against people, but a struggle against nature itself. And so this idea is that living in the wilderness made Americans the kind of people they are. So to give our listeners some sort of idea here, when we describe the characteristics of Americans that might be linked to wilderness, the one that first comes to mind for me is like this idea of independence. Can you think of others? Why independence?
Bold.
Because you're alone in the wilderness. Bold, maybe because you have to be brave.
Bold, intrepid, yes. You have to
self-sufficiency is one I think of. The idea being that you should be able to take care of yourself and provide for yourself, of course, again, because you're the only one out there in the wilderness.
And hardy probably goes along with that. Like, you have to be strong. You have to be willing to deal with all of these challenges and not be defeated.
Yeah. It's worth noting that other writers beside this Stenger have noted that there are some negative aspects of this, because the idea here is kind of that you're fighting nature. And so, in a lot of ways, cutting down trees means taking control of your future, which isn't really the same thing as conservation. So it's important, I think, to note that this is like a national identity as opposed to the only way to do things. It's the way it's thought of sort of in this American context. So it's the thing that has helped to make America different, or make Americans different from. And until we forget it, in the roar of our industrial cities, more fortunate than other people. So people sometimes forget their wilderness nature, but it's part of who they are, regardless of whether they remember it. So what happens then, Linda, according to Stenger, if you don't have these places where the wilderness personality can emerge?
Well, then the U.S. would be just like every other over-industrialized place in the world.
Over-industrialized?
Yeah.
What's that?
That means that it's overdeveloped, like industrial. Mm. It's been developed to a degree that threatens people's health, the economy, or the environment. So it's overly done. Too much. And we saw that in the industrialization in England, how that all the pollution caused health hazards and polluted the environment, and we did not want
this
that.
This does seem to be a common human pattern, right? Because often the process of becoming industrialized is a process of kind of lifting people out of poverty. So people are able to have jobs and they're able to have material things. But then we seem to get to a point where, as groups of people, we feel like we've gone too far. And then there's kind of this awakening of an environmental movement. Like, that very much did happen in Britain. It sort of clearly happened here in the United States. You can kind of see it happening in many places in Asia. Like over the last couple of decades,
industrial revolution,
yeah, where people sort of think like maybe, it, you know, having one more factory is not worth more than cleaning up this river.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, but then it ends up being much more negative, at least towards the environment and health-wise.
There you go. Stenger, this is the writer of the letter, expressed little concern with how wilderness might support outdoor recreation on public lands. So he wasn't really concerned about setting up campsites, for example. He was thinking much bigger picture. He didn't want to set up campsites and places for tourists to go canoeing or things like that. What was he more interested in?
Well, what he cared about was Americans' freedom to protect and enjoy these places.
Okay. So in keeping with that idea, he didn't care if there were roads or trails or homesteads or even natural resource extraction. So, you know, as far as he was concerned, giving Americans access to the wilderness was what mattered. It didn't matter if there were mines in that wilderness or we were cutting down trees or building roads through it or hiking trails or whatever.
He wasn't too hung up on the details of it, but he wanted these lands to be available for Americans.
Now, as a quick note, let's talk about that word homestead there because it's a little different than a house or a farm, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's defined as a piece of land. It's usually used for farming, so you'll have a house there. And then the family who lives there or families, they will work the land.
It's kind of like saying a first generation farm in some ways. The idea usually with a homestead is like a person moves out into a wilderness area and they sort of cut down trees, build the home themselves by hand, and turn the wilderness into something else, a more habited place. But it's not, the idea with homestead is things are a lot rougher. Like it's a very, the idea is that independence and self-sufficiency are sort of the main things there. Like people are not, you know, contracting a construction company to drive in and build a cement house. They're kind of cutting down trees and building a log cabin and things like that.
And in the past, they were given to these families by the government because the government wanted people to move into those areas.
Yeah. So he wasn't concerned how they were doing this. He just wanted Americans to have the freedom to protect and enjoy these places. And then this is presumably the important bit here. Stenger recognized that the freedom to protect, to restrain ourselves from consuming, was just as important as the freedom to consume. Now, I don't know. There is a phrase that I've heard people use in English. Your rights are my responsibility. And my rights are your responsibility. Have you heard this expression?
Something of that sort. So saying things are hand in hand. Like there, what you do will affect me. What I do will affect you.
That's right. There's this really interesting term I've heard in law classes where there's obvious like this Western common law idea. We say my rights end where your nose begins. Meaning like I am free but not free to harm your freedom, take away your freedom or your rights. And so there's sort of a similar idea at play here, right? Where you have the freedom to use it, but you also have to balance that with the freedom to protect it for the use of everybody, I guess, is kind of the idea. That's how I take that.
Issue of balance, that's very important.
So obviously for most of us as modern people, that idea will not be completely alien, completely unheard of. But I guess the idea is this is where this idea is sort of being first promoted in relation to the idea of wilderness in the U.S. anyway. That brings us to our second reading. Let's jump into that now.
The Geography of Hope. Perhaps most importantly, he wrote, wilderness was an intangible and spiritual resource, a place that gave the nation our hope and our excitement. Landscapes that were good for our spiritual health, even if we never once in 10 years set foot in it. Stegner penned the letter during a national debate about the value of preserving wild places in the face of future development. Something will have gone out of us as a people, he wrote, if we ever let the remaining wilderness be destroyed. If not protected, Stegner believed these wildlands that helped shape American identity would fall to what he viewed as the same exploitative forces of unrestrained capitalism that had industrialized the nation for the past century. The closing sentences of the letter are Stegner's best. We simply need that wild country available to us, even if we never do more than drive to its edge and look in. For it can be a means of reassuring ourselves of our sanity as creatures, a part of the geography of hope.
The geography of hope. This is sort of a familiar phrasal pattern, I'm going to call this in English. Like the science of vitamins, right? The geography of hope. The history of freedom. This kind of pattern. When we talk about geography here, we're talking about, you know, maps and places. How is that connected to hope?
It is mapping out where hope is.
Creating places where hope can be found, I suppose. That's how I would think of it, right? It says, perhaps most importantly, so this is returning to the letter, of course. Stenger wrote, wilderness was, give us the quote there, Linda.
An intangible and spiritual resource, a place that gave the nation our hope and our excitement.
Yeah. And the landscapes were good for our spiritual health, even if we never once in 10 years set foot in it. So there's a couple of interesting ideas here.
Yeah.
An intangible resource.
Right. So something that's intangible, you can't physically touch it. So we're talking about a spiritual resource, somewhere you can get filled spiritually. Like it's not something that you can touch or see, but by being in wilderness, you get refilled.
See, I would say in this sense, it's more like you can't measure the value of the resource. I think that, there's this idea that struck me a number of years ago, you know, when I was thinking about nonprofit organizations. One of the things I realized that was that nonprofit organizations, in, you know, ideally, do things that are valuable but are hard to monetize, hard to get money out of. But that doesn't mean they're not valuable things that are being done. It's just hard to connect them to the economy for whatever reason, right? But it's still important that they're done. And I think this is kind of the same idea.
Mm-hmm.
Like you want to have these wilderness places that are rich in resources, but you're not mining in them, things like that. Now, why? Well, because they're spiritual. Now here, the distinction here is we're not talking about religion here. We're talking more about like the human spirit and you know, mental health, I guess you could almost say, right? Mental health.
Very much so,
yeah. So this is not an explicitly religious statement here. We're talking more about like keeping people mentally healthy and happy. They are also places that give us hope and excitement.
Mm-hmm.
So they're places that, you know, make people proud of their country, and they give you, you know, an idea that there is always an alternative, I suppose.
Yeah.
Right?
Seeing an endless, beautiful landscape, like that gives me hope. Like there's just potential in that.
See, I don't know how dominant this idea is, but coming from a rural area in North America, now I don't live on a farm. I live on an area in an area where there are houses where there's a bunch of space between the houses. Like people have their own little areas of forest or field, mini farms, if you will, mini farms. But you could never earn a living on these farms. So who lives on these places? Retired people from the city.
Mm.
Like there's this idea that people want to escape the rat race. So they retire and they move to a life of ease in nature, out in the country. And I think the idea is that this provides hope and excitement, an alternative for people, even if it's just a summer vacation with the family.
Yeah.
A different way of living. The third one there was it's good for our spiritual health. And again, spiritual health, you know, the human spirit. And the really interesting part was even if we never once in 10 years set foot in it. So even if we don't use it very often, it's important for our mental health. Why do you think that is?
Well, to know that it is there. That is, it's a resource that won't disappear.
And like, it's not going away,
exactly.
Right? It's always going to be there.
Permanently there, yes.
Yeah, like you don't have to worry, like, if you don't get there in the next 2 years, it's going to be gone.
Mm-hmm. And it's just a reassurance that it's there. I don't have to worry about not seeing, even if I don't go there in 10 or 20 years, like it's still there. Just knowing that is reassuring.
Okay, so it tells us that this letter was penned, meaning written, during a time of great national debate about the value of preserving wild places in the face of future development. So, you know, people want to use these wild places more or less. They want to develop them or not develop them. There's debate going on. And we get this quote, something will have gone out of us as a people if we ever let the remaining wilderness be destroyed. So we're going to lose this identity of who we are as a people if
part
we get
of our
rid of these
soul
things.
We will lose. And this is not a debate that has expired, that still goes on.
That's
true. People are always wanting to use, they have a better idea to use these public lands to make money off of them, but we have to remain steadfast, just as how Stegner wrote.
Yeah. So it says, if not protected, Stegner believed that these places that had shaped the American identity, helped make Americans what they were, would fall to what he viewed as the same exploitative forces of unrestrained capitalism that had industrialized the nation for the past century. So the unrestrained capitalism is this idea that people have, they just want to make money.
Yep.
It's the most important thing. And he's basically saying that the nation had fallen to this, meaning this had become the way people were operating. Mm-hmm. And as a result, the nation had just been more and more industrialized.
Yeah, greed, right? Capitalism, right, is what helped us to become a strong, like economically strong nation. But if unrestrained, then that creates problems. That's what he's talking about here. Then it becomes exploitative. And we might do this, well, we've been prevented from doing it within our own nation, but then it could go somewhere else and exploit lands. Like
closing out, we have Stenger's best line. It's at the very end of our article and the very end of his letter. We simply need that wild country available to us, even if we never do more than drive to its edge and look in. So we need to have the option of having wilderness to engage in. Why? Because it can be a means of reassuring ourselves of our sanity as creatures, part of the geography of hope. So we need to have these wild places that we can access to remind ourselves of who we truly are as Americans.
Right, and to preserve our sanity, our mental health.
Listeners, thank you so much for joining us for The Great Outdoors. Until next time on Advanced, I'm Simon.
I'm Linda.
Saying goodbye for now.
Goodbye.